I have a special guest calling in from Grand Marais, actually Lonnie Dupree, Arctic explorer and Denali summiter, is with me here on the line. Thanks so much, Lonnie, for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Katya. I appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to it. I see we have a good morning on there, a beautiful morning here on the North Shore.
It is a beautiful morning on the North Shore. And as most listeners know, we've been out on the lake sailing for a month now. And once again, you just, within 5 feet of shore, the temperature rises, and I'm finding it could be quite blissfully warm too compared to what's out on the lake. But you are no stranger to cold, and I know that, you know, summiting Denali by yourself in the winter is probably the most recent thing you've done to that people might know about. But this winter, you've actually been up to something else. And it relates a little bit back to your history with Greenland exploring and a little bit of a return. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing and why.
Yeah. So, I just got back from Greenland. And about 23 years ago, a friend of mine, John Holzer, and I, we circumnavigated the Greenland by kayak in the south and dog sled in the north. And while we were doing that over the course of, I think it was 5 years, we lived and traveled and made friends with the polar Inuit up in northwest Greenland. And fast forward to now, I wanted to go back to Greenland to see how things have changed over the last 2 decades and then visit old friends that I had stayed with there years ago. And so that's what we planned to do. So we ended up going up to Greenland to relook at the communities up there, how what has changed in the last 2 decades, visit old friends and hand them old photographs that I took of them years ago. Of course, some were kids and some were quite old at the time, and of course, some were had passed away since then. But we went up there with the primary goal of producing a film about what we're going to find out. And so using our expedition from 20 years ago as a baseline for the film, it's kind of a then and now kind of story that we're hoping to tell.
Yeah. And I'm guessing between climate change and the internet, a lot has changed.
Yes, a lot has changed. So when I was there, when we were there, you know, 2 decades ago, there was basically just a few of the small houses had landlines in them for telephone, and there was just a few small black and white televisions that would get a sitcom out of Denmark through a small satellite dish behind the village. And now, of course, everybody's got, you know, large TVs, large color TVs, and everybody's got a smartphone. And so you have this extremely isolated community that is now tapped into what the rest of the world is doing.
Yeah.
And so you can imagine that's kind of interesting on their end, because they don't have the resources and income to be able to fly out of there. It's very expensive.
Right.
So they're stuck in these communities seeing with what's going on in the rest of the world. And I think probably a lot of them are glad they are stuck there. And others kind of probably wish that they could go do some exploring. So there's that on that level. And then on a climate change level, a lot of the landscape, which was covered in ice cap right out to the coastline up there years ago, has receded and leaving bare rock. And a matter of fact, the coastline has changed so much visibly that they created new maps in the area so you can, travel by sight. So you know what you're looking at. So, you know, when you got these big mounds of ice and glaciers that have now receded, and some of the ice caps have receded too, just leaving that bare rock, it's really hard to distinguish where you are from the old map.
It must also really affect travel, dog sled being the traditional mode of travel. And I know you did do some dog sledding. Tell us a little bit about what that was like, or difficult or easy. I know you had to change some plans.
Yeah, so the only way to get around up there, of course, is to have a dog team. And since that has been my forte over the years, I gathered up a team of 13 Inuit dogs right away in January when I got there, because we're going to need transportation for the 4 months of filming we're going to be there. So I put together a dog team, got them all trained up so I could travel around with the hunters and with a film person, that would Eva Capozzola, who was going to document everything we did through photographs and video, and she did a good job. And so we the fjord ice, of course, there is much thinner than it used to be. The ice 20 years ago was well over, seven feet thick in the fjord ice. And when I was there, it was under 2 feet thick. So a lot of that ice isn't forming as thick as it used to. And then all around all the capes and stuff, around the villages where the water can create a current going around these capes with the in and outgoing tides, also made the ice very thin in those spots. In some places, it doesn't even form. And so many of these old dog sled routes are gone, and people are having to rely to go over land in places where you can actually do that, because all the land up there is fairly mountainous, so you can't run around with dogs anywhere you please. You're pretty much stuck to the fjord ice and then a few spots where you can go over land.
So you are constantly flexing and adjusting your travel that way. And I believe your partner, Pascal, also had some change in plans. You want to just tell a little bit about what she's been doing as well? It's pretty fun to hear her story, too.
Right. Yeah, we were up there. We had a two-part project, one to do a film on the culture and the changes over the last two decades. The other one was a ski expedition that would leave from Connick area. It's the village of Connick, and we'd go by ski all the way to where Greenland and Canada almost meet. It's right in the Kennedy-Smith Sound Channel area in Kane Basin, and where the two countries are separated by about just under 50 kilometers. And so they were going to ski across this section of sea ice to get into Ellesmere Island, then carry on south by skis to Baffin Island. But that area between the two islands, the ice never formed this year. And it's been getting thinner and thinner and not forming year after year. And we think it's pretty much impossible now to ski across that area. One, because of warm ocean currents coming from the south, and the other one, of course, with climate change heating up the Arctic.
Seems like that's just a factor of being explorers, the ability to change plans. It seems more and more, but that's always been true.
In the old days, we could read books from 100 years ago to decide on what we needed to do because the climate was stable. Now you have to throw all that stuff out the window,
right.
and you never know what you're going to get from one year to the next.
I know. Well, the pilot charts is the same way. You used to be able to look at the pilot charts to decide when you're going to sail what ocean. And I'm not sure those pilot charts are as valuable as they once were.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. So do you have any, were there any surprises, Lonnie, or anything that you want to highlight, especially coming from this last few months out in Greenland? It seems like you had some expectations.
When we were there a few decades ago, it was mainly a hunting community, all dog teams. There was maybe, 1,000 to 1,500 dogs in Connick. All transportation was done by dog team. There was no snow machines or ATVs. And now when I went back there, there's quite a few more snow machines, which have been recently allowed because they were banned actually before, because the hunters wanted to continue on the hunting tradition using dogs because they're more reliable. They don't scare the wildlife and so on and so forth. But what happened is their culture has slowly switched from hunting to fishing. And now because the fishing creates a pretty good economic base for them, they're using snow machines to transport fish from further down the fjord back to Connick, where they're then processed. So you got this economic cash flow that's coming in that gives them a little extra money, but also snow machines are very expensive, hard to keep maintained in such a remote village. So a lot of them are left stranded, probably wishing they had their dog teams back. So anyways, we're seeing a switch from dogs to snow machines, and hopefully it doesn't go by the way of the Canadian Arctic, where pretty much all the dog teams are gone now and everything's done by snow machine. Same thing in Alaska. So we don't want to lose that part, and there's still some young hunters up and coming, which is really nice to see. So we'll wait and see how things play out in the next few years. And then there's, of course, this receding sea ice. There'll be all these polar Inuit villages are locked in by land, steep land, surrounding land masses. So it's very difficult to get out. If there's no sea ice, you're pretty much stuck in those villages unless you travel by boat. But you can only travel by boat in the summer months. So that would leave the other 8 months out of the year, where you're 8 or 9 months out of the year that you can't, you're basically stuck in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a serious situation for these Arctic communities losing ice.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Do you have any way to encapsulate what you feel is their view on this all? Are they feeling like it's all going downhill, or are there signs of hope? What do you hear from them?
Well, they understand that the Earth is warming. They understand that they're losing their sea ice, and they understand that it's not going to be around forever. I don't think they quite grasp how fast it's happening.
Mm.
And I think that's probably one of the issues there, because they've always had ice and snow, but
right.
They do see it's going, but they don't realize that it might actually go and be gone.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of sad. But, you know, they seem to be adapting to what they have and, you know, coming up with alternative routes. But a lot of these villages are getting cut off from each other because the ice is melting between these villages and they can't get there in dark side even in the regular season, like trying to get south down to a village called Savasivik. So it's really heartbreaking actually to see that. But they seem to be adapting the best they can. And it's interesting.
It really is, and it's so ironic because, you know, so much of the rest of the world, travel just gets easier and easier, and then yet for people that have physical barriers, you know, this is a very interesting phenomenon where they're just getting more and more isolated.
Yeah, they are getting more and more isolated because, you know, they can't just hop an airplane and fly out of there because it's extremely expensive. You know, a one-way ticket out of Connacht anywhere south is in the neighborhood of $3,000. So it's like, and then when you're subsidized by the government with a government check, you know, the best you can hope for is to subsidize that check with hunting to put food on the table and or fishing. And so there's not a lot of money left over for travel.
Hmm.
And so they got to make a go of what they have there.
And all of this will be highlighted and explained in your film coming up. Do you want to tell us a working title for that film or help us to look forward to it?
Yeah, we're still working on a title for it, but it's going to be 45 minutes. And it's going to give you kind of a then and now when John and I circumnavigated it. But we're just going to touch on that just ever so slightly in the very beginning to give people a grounding of it. And then really going to focus on the lives of the people that are there, their culture. It's about embracing their knowledge. It's about embracing how they live simply with a little less stuff, but are very happy. About embracing ingenuity and improvising with things that, you know, they only have so many things there, so they improvise maybe one thing that can do multiple tasks. And so it's about taking that simplicity and bringing it back here and applying it to our own lives, which are overly complicated and materialistic at some point.
Yeah, wonderful. So, well, and it's coming out in the next year, right?
Yeah, we're hoping in 1 year from now we'll have it out at least into the film festivals. And, well, actually, hopefully the film festivals will start picking it up by the next go-around. So if we have, we're hoping to have most of the editing done by this coming winter, by January.
Okay.
And then we'll just get it out to film festivals. And that's usually what happens. We'll push it through the film festivals first. See if we get any takers, and then go from there.
Yeah. Wonderful. Great. Well, that's a great recap, Lonnie. Thank you. And let's just close by making sure everyone knows that you also are an author and just outline. I think you've written at least one or two books. Just tell us what they are.
Yeah. My most recent book from Minnesota Press is Alone at the Top, is 2015 Winter Solo of Denali. And then Life on Ice is a book I wrote about the past 25 years of doing expeditions in the Arctic. Yeah, those two books there. I have a couple others, but they're out of print. It's called Greenland Expedition, and it's put out by Creative Publishing International, and it's about our kayak journey in the west coast of Greenland.
Right.
If anybody wants a copy of those books, they can just go on my website, and I have a section there on the books.
Yeah, tell us your website.
That's just Lonnie, just my name, LonnieDupree.com.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much, Lonnie, and I hope you get some rest now and can enjoy North Minnesota's summer. Should be a good
Thank
one.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Katya. I appreciate it.
All right, you take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Lonnie Dupree. He is Arctic explorer and current Greenland filmmaker who lives in Grand Marais, Minnesota.